Previously on The Bear Cave.
You're running a similar speed to Heidi Gabry, so last
week. Please note, this following podcast features bad language right from the fucking start.
And now, recorded live in Southampton, England, you're listening to The Bear Cave
and other podcasts.
This is a diary of the nosy little shit.
This week on Goggle Fox, a staggering episode all about walking when drunk.
Fuck My Life, a podcast by Her Majesty the Queen.
Real audio wrestling, the best wrestling promotion that you've never seen.
This is Baz and Dave's hidden cinemagic.
Tune in next week for a much better episode. For now, courage.
Now, here's your host, Al Bear Galpin.
Hello and welcome to the Channel Hopping Multi-Podcast Experience. The show's an amalgamation of ideas from my podcasts, other people's podcasts, and completely made-up podcasts, all thrown into one big melting pot for your oral delight. You're listening to Episode 3 of The Bear Cave and other podcasts. This show features edited highlights from the Dead Piet Society Live, which you can see every Tuesday evening on getvocal.com. Unfortunately, in the last couple of weeks, we've had some audio issues, so I didn't put an episode out the week before last. We didn't do an episode this week, so I am releasing this with edited highlights from last week's live show. We also feature other podcasters talking about their shows and either doing mini episodes with them or hearing a clip from one of their shows. And we also have our occasional feature, Sucking Eggs. If you'd like to get involved with the show in any way, you can find us online at owlbear.uk/cave. You can email us bearcave@owlbear.uk. Leave us a voicemail on anchor.fm/bearcave and find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram or Twitch. It's OwlBearUK on all of those. On this week's show, we take a look at the week's weirdest news with the weird week that was with my co-hosts Darren Saunders and Lloyd Collins. And I talk to Darren some more about his podcast 60,000 and we hear a clip from one of his episodes.
Looking back at the oddest stories of the past 7 days, this is The Weird Week That Was.
The Weird Week That Was.
Before we get to our actual news stories, a little rundown of some weird things that have happened that are, well, either the headline gives everything away, so it's not worth discussing, or have been widely reported. So this week, some things that have happened in the news. A libertarian presidential nominee had to cancel a rally appearance after being bitten by a bat. Ross Kemp learnt the hard way not to disturb wasps as he got stung all over his face. A brewery had to apologise after being called out over a humiliating mistake when naming their new beer after the Maori word for pubic hair. Scientists had to rename some human genes to stop Microsoft Excel from misreading them as dates. Australia has invented Critopedia, dubbed Shazam for spiders. Amazon had to sack a delivery driver after someone caught him pooing in the garden. People have signed up to have their home cooking brutally roasted by Gordon Ramsay. And a new £2.3 million roundabout in Cambridgeshire had a bit of a PR disaster as a car crashed on it a day before the official opening. So there's some of the random headlines that have been around this week, but not the ones we're going to talk about at length. They are just showing you the weird world that we live in. We have five headlines. We are going to instantly get rid of one based purely on the headline and never hear mention of again before working our way through the other four, declaring one of them our story of the week. So if anyone's got any comments about the stories as we go, do let us know. We'll read them out as we go through. So this week's headlines are: woman sparks outrage with pasta table that leaves people wanting to vomit. The hot guy from every 90s show runs a cult now. Hasbro removing Trolls dolls from stores after complaints of an inappropriately placed button. US government issues bear advice, friends don't let friends get eaten. And finally, advert for new e-bike banned in France because it discredits the entire car sector. So they are our five headlines. Any of those that you particularly want to get rid of?
What was the first one again?
Woman sparks outrage with pasta table that leaves people wanting to vomit.
I'm intrigued by that, but not particularly more so than the rest of them.
Okay.
No, the car one in France, I mean...
Okay.
So what?
So
we've outraged the French. What, you know, what easier thing is there in the world?
Well, indeed.
Right, so we'll either get rid of the pasta table or the car, or the bike even, because they annoyed the cars.
As a keen cyclist, I'm very interested in that last story.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to cast a deciding vote and get rid of the pasta table as well, then. We'll ditch that one.
Yeah.
And we'll keep
it. Fair enough.
So we will go on to that. We don't then talk about that story. If you think that's a mistake and you want to know what it's about, then keep listening. I'll tell you later where you can find that article online. But let's get to the other stories. In fact, because it was the first one, it will actually come up on the slide when I switch over. So it's in the mirror. Anyway, first story that we will talk about is this one. The hot guy from every 90s show runs a cult now. This is in Cracked. It says, remember 10 things I hate about you, which my wife is watching downstairs right now, or Party of Five, or Boy Meets World, or Moesha, or Seventh Heaven, or Sabrina the Teenage Witch, or Full House, or Step by Step. And then it says, gotcha, no one remembers Step by Step. That's right, I don't know what that is. It says, if so, you're definitely familiar with Andrew Keegan, who very likely had some responsibility for your sexual awakening. Well, that very much depends on who's
reading. Not mine, but you carry on.
He says, well, he runs maybe, a cult now. There's a picture of him there, if anyone is unsure of him. It says, in 2014, Keegan founded Full Circle, a spiritual movement that was until recently based at a Venice Beach temple. It's run by an inner circle of 8 core members who Keegan has deemed enlightened and show slavish devotion to Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Shakespearean nemesis. And who can blame them? It says, they all collectively own a parrot named Krishna. It was definitely the least insufferable person there. It's not entirely clear what they believed. One inner circle member gave a vague answer about cosmic energy, especially Keegan's, and hallucinogenic drugs. While Keegan himself explained, synchronicity, time, that's what it's all about. Whatever, the past, some other time, it's a circle. In the centre is now. That's what it's about. Also something about colon cleanses. It all stemmed from a handful of incidents, like when Keegan and his friends got jumped at the beach at the same time as the 2011 tsunami in Japan, and another time when a street lamp exploded when he was looking at it. Because once you rack up a certain number of 17 spreads, you start to think the world actually revolves around you. As far as cults go, it seems pretty harmless. Just your basic goopinalia of crystals, cultural appropriation, and rubbing against people under the guise of spiritual advancement. They've recently fallen on hard times, sadly. First, they got busted for selling illegal kombucha, and then they lost their temple after the rent went up, and they found there isn't much money in black market fermented beverages. We can only hope that Krishna is being safely fostered. That is the story.
I mean, it always starts harmless enough, but it ends up with Scientology. Or 2,000 years of Christianity.
I mean, yeah. It's got all the ingredients of something like this happening, isn't it? It's in California. You'd expect that to be happening in California. It's got someone from Hollywood who cannot get a job anymore. Tick. And also, is it possible we took all that Moesha, Party of Five, Seventh Heaven, Sabrina the Teenage Witch money, went, hang on, I don't want the tax man doing this. I know, I'll start a cult because that's tax deductible.
Yeah.
Also, colon cleanses.
Yeah.
Colon cleanses you can lay your hands on, as it were.
But there's always something like that, and isn't there? There's always some sort of weird, like, ritual or some sort of weird thing that people have to do to cleanse yourself. And it was a part of it, isn't it? Because there's always a ritual, isn't there?
Yeah. Jim in the comments says kombucha is glorified vinegar.
Yeah, I've never had kombucha.
Yeah. Do you know, I'd never heard of kombucha until about 3 weeks ago when I started listening to the Zach Braff Donald Faison podcast, and they've started advertising kombucha. I have no idea what it is.
Isn't it? Don't a lot of footballers like drink it or something like that?
Don't know.
Because it's like a drug, but it's not on the sort of the banned list, as it were.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I've seen it in the shops, but I've never even been tempted to try it.
Illegal high jobbies.
I'll get a jug of it for work, and I'll report.
we'll see how that goes. We'll talk about that on the next show.
If you hear of any train crashes where the welding sheared in half, then we'll know what kombucha's like.
Not welding the tracks upwards or something like that. Yeah.
No, they don't let me loose on the tracks. A very sensible company.
So that's the end of that story. That is just basically, yeah, a guy who did a lot of stuff in the 90s, now runs a cult, because of course he does. This next story, Hasbro removing Trolls doll from stores after complaints of an inappropriately placed button, as you can see it there in the picture. Toymaker Hasbro says it's removing a Trolls doll from store shelves after people complain that button on the doll is inappropriately placed under its skirt. Decision comes after an online petition was created urging stores to remove the doll. The petition amassed nearly 300,000 signatures. It says, when you push this button on the doll's private, she gasps and giggles. This is not okay for a child's toy. This toy needs to be removed from our stores, says the petition, which is addressed to Target, Walmart, Amazon, Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. A video of a mum demonstrating the doll's button, which when pressed activates the doll's voice, has gone viral on several social media platforms. In a statement to CBS News, Julie Duffy, the Senior Vice President of Global Communications at Hasbro, said, this feature was designed to react when the doll was seated, but we recognise the placement of the sensor may be perceived as inappropriate. This was not intentional, and we're happy to provide customers with a replacement puppy doll of similar value through our consumer care team. We are in the process of removing the item for purchase, Duffy's statement continued. Trolls dolls were first created in 1959 and have seen many iterations and levels of fame over the years. Poppy, voiced by Anna Kendrick, is one of the main characters in the latest Trolls film, Trolls World Tour. So, yeah, it is an odd place for a button.
Can I say that I know we're here to be lighthearted and have fun and such, but the unnecessary sexualization of everything by people on the internet, and indeed in society as a whole, is one of the worst things that we do. Yeah. It's a child's toy, for Christ's sake. And that's just... no.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It seems... when you think about it, if... oh, we want it to say something when it sits down. Okay, well, where else are you going to put it? Of course, yeah. You can put it on the butt.
Yeah. But then you get the internet Puritans. Oh no, you can't. No, it's a doll that makes sex noises. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's an odd one. I mean,
yeah.
I suppose
that wasn't very lighthearted.
It could be on there.
It's not on its bottom, is it? I mean, it's like,
well,
it's
yeah,
in between.
It's not, it's between the legs, isn't it? But if you actually put it on the bottom, then it's not going to go off, is it? So
no.
It should be maybe on the thigh, but I don't know if that's any better. But
or maybe
just
it better,
but not have one.
Yeah, there is a history of this with toys, isn't there? There was that. You remember? There's a Buzz Lightyear sippy cup, which had a straw protruding from the very, very wrongest place you could have put a straw.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. There was some that one, and that was so obvious as well. People were like, nobody noticed this. So these things go through quality control.
Yeah.
So somewhere, someone's really, really could not thought about it, or it's a real design error, isn't it? I mean, I will say though, people will be going out buying that because it will have value later on.
Oh yeah, Hasbro will make bank off of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know
they'll sell all of them, and then you know it'll get
Oh no, this is the inappropriate one. You know,
it says they're removing them from store shelves, probably to put online themselves. You know, sell them on eBay under different names. But so that's. Not much to that story, but that basically, and what they then class as an inappropriately placed button is weird.
I mean, we've all got one.
We do. It's one of those things, though. Every toy these days seems to have some form of tech in it. I mean, it's just a doll.
Yeah.
Kids,
I've seen
do they not have the imagination?
Small soldiers.
Do they not have the imagination just to? I can pretend I'm saying the things that she said in the film. I didn't have to have a button for it to say it.
Because actually, that does take away from the... I was listening to a podcast about this a few months back, and they were talking about the unnecessary technologization, that's not even the word, of toys.
Mm.
And how, because microprocessors have got so small and so cheap, we've bunged that kind of technology into everything. Which has the knock-on effect of making it so that kids don't use their imagination as much because they don't need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, sorry, I'm getting away from being lighthearted. I think the other thing as well, there's a lot of parents out there who don't want to have to answer questions about things and have to sort of get into that. It's like the bit on the BBC... with the two girls kissing on that TV program, there was some outrage about that. It's like, well, you know, and it's a lot of, because parents don't want to have to answer, you know, have that conversation. Well, at a certain point, you're going to have that conversation with your child. You know, it's, you can't sort of keep them away from it. So, yeah, it's very odd. And kids do have an amazing imagination anyway. They don't need all this. Mm. You know, you can give them a cardboard box and they'll be able to do something with it.
Oh, yeah.
Just like my cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, cats kids, and kids, cats, all the same.
They're all the same.
Cats, kids, you know, animals, they're all kind of the same, aren't they? Yeah.
Absolutely. You've got to feed them, pick up the poo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. So we'll move on to the next story, which is this from The Guardian. US government issues bear advice, friends don't let friends get eaten. The National Park Service has warned against sacrificing slower friends in a bear attack, even if the friendship has run its course. Here it says, there are a few potential reactions to being attacked by a bear. Stand your ground and attempt to scare it off, run away, or perhaps curl up into the fetal position and hope for the best. The US government has now, however, officially advised against the most cowardly option, pushing over a slower friend to save yourself. The National Park Service has warned against sacrificing another person to an irate bear, even if you think the friendship has run its course, in a rather informal set of recommendations posted on Facebook. Bear attacks are a rare but real threat in parts of the US, with a man recently videoing his own mangled hand and arm after encountering a grizzly bear in an abandoned shed in Montana. In a separate incident this week, wildlife officials in Alaska killed four bears suspected of involvement in the death of a man who was mauled while clearing a trail behind his property. There have been a record number of grizzly bear attacks in the Yellowstone region in 2020, possibly due to the increase in people hiking in the region in search of a respite from pandemic lockdowns. In the National Park's message, anyone coming face-to-face with a bear is advised to move away closely and sideways. I think they mean slowly and sideways. This allows you to keep an eye on the bear and avoid tripping. Moving sideways is also non-threatening to bears. People should not run. Like dogs, they will chase fleeing animals, the message warns, or escape up a tree, as both grizzlies and black bears are adept at climbing trees. The warning then adds, do not push down a slower friend, even if you think the friendship is on its course. Instead, it is advised that people hold their ground and make a noise to identify yourself as a human and not as a prey animal. We recommend using your voice. Waving and showing off your opposable thumb means nothing to the bear, the message reads. To reiterate the concern over unscrupulous hikers pushing others to doom to save themselves, the post ends by stating, we apologise to any friends who were brought on a hike as the bait or a sacrifice to save the group. You will be missed. There we go. Official, wow. Some light-hearted government advice there.
Hmm.
Do you know what? It's, bear attacks is one of the things that... I love the idea of just going out into the American wilderness, like take my bike and just backpack and just go.
Yeah.
But I don't know what bear is what. I know that there are some that you can climb a tree to get away from. There are some that you play dead, and there are some that will get you whether you, and ultimately the only thing I know about bear attacks is if that bear is white, there is literally nothing you can do to stop it eating you.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's it.
Rupert will tell you.
Well, about. Bears is just an example of, you know, nature's, one of nature's killing machines. So you just have to sort of be aware. Like we have bears in Romania as well, up in the Carpathian Mountains, and I know a few people have seen them out there. They don't tend to go near where people are, but they will occasionally sort of walk by the road and stuff, and you have to kind of slow down in the car and just...
Are they the little ones?
Now you're asking me a big question there. No, they're sufficiently big that there's a breed of dog here which is pretty much as big as a bear, which they've bred out here that was traditionally there to protect flocks. And a few years ago when I visited Romania for the first time, went up to the town of Brasov, and up there, up in Brasov, when we sort of went up into the hill, there was a little cafe, and I thought it was a bear rug, like a bearskin rug by this fire in this cafe. No, it was this dog. It was absolutely ginormous. So, yeah, they can be aggressive. But again, you have to sort of just, with all these things, sort of read the advice before you go out there.
And don't think the other thing is just bear friends to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in California a few years back, and we went to... God, what national park was it? Not Yellowstone.
Yosemite?
Yes, Yosemite, thank you. And they had designed rubbish bins there to be kind of bear-proof, and they said the main reason people end up being attacked by bears is they leave food out because they can smell the food over quite a big distance. and they'll how break into your car. They'll quite happily smash out a car and, oh, yeah, and climb in. And they do show like pictures of a car after they've been in it, just to sort of get people to understand how serious
the damage,
this is.
Yeah,
yeah, it's one of those kind of classic town country things, isn't it? Where people from towns come in and they don't understand sort of how you need to interact with wildlife. So I'm from the New Forest, as Alan is. So we've grown up with animals roaming around. So like you know, you're driving along the road and the New Forest pony will happily just walk in front of you.
Yeah.
And we were going through the Village of Beauty the other day, and bearing in mind that the New Forest ponies and donkeys are at the very, very least semi-wild. I mean, most of them are pretty wild. People were petting them and feeding them. There was even a little girl who was by this foal, and she was cuddling it, and the mother was next to it in kickable range. And you're just like, you absolute idiots. You know, get out.
Confess, I have animals. Fed a donkey in oh, God, Roundhill campsite. Out in Brockenhurst, because we were sat having our breakfast and the donkeys came wandering over and they got their face into our food anyway.
Yeah. We had to protect, when Hunter was a bit smaller and he was in a pushchair having a bottle of milk, we had to get in the way of between him and the donkeys who kept trying to take his bottle of milk away.
They're brazen.
Yeah.
Oh, I will say one more thing about that. When you read out the headline earlier, I part of me wondered whether it was about bears in the wild, as in the animal, or the bears, as in the gay designation of a large hairy man. That, yes, then, that headline has a very, very different connotation.
Yes, it does.
And the accompanying picture is a man in a bear suit.
It could well be a bear in a bear suit. Ugly. It definitely got that air to it.
Absolutely. So we'll move on to the last story of the week. Story number four is from Cycling Weekly. Advert for new e-bike banned in France because it discredits the entire car sector. An advert for a Dutch bike has been banned in France because it discredits the entire car industry. The 45-second long ad for a Dutch e-bike builder, Van Moof, has been pulled from screens for highlighting the congestion and pollution caused by cars. French advertising watchdog, the Autorité de Régulation Professionnelle de la Publicité, ARPP, has taken the commercial off air because it supposedly creates a climate of fear about motor vehicles. The ad, which is still being aired on Dutch and German TV, shows a shiny black vehicle with images being reflected from the surface, showing oil refineries, traffic queues and emergency services. In a letter to Van Moof, the ARPP said, "Some images in the reflection of the car are, in our opinion, unbalanced and discredit the entire car sector." I don't know about discredit, they're all true. Surely,
yeah. As a cyclist, which is the most insufferable thing one can say, but as a cyclist, I have noticed how incredibly thin-skinned enthusiastic motorists are. They do not like being called out for things that they are a part of, and I speak also as somebody who drives a car. You know, I'm not 100%. Cyclist, and this is just kind of depressingly predictable.
Yeah,
and also those bikes are really nice. I've seen them before.
So it's an e-bike. So does that mean it's electric? It's got electric motor in it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They're hellishly expensive, those particular models, but they are.
Yeah. So is it that the thing kicks in when you go up a hill? Presumably, it sort of helps.
Yeah,
you go.
Yeah.
Right.
It's pedal assist.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds like my kind of bike.
Yeah. It's a, the let's put it, the war between cyclists and car drivers kind of drives me mad, because I think the thing about it from my perspective is someone who I do drive when I go back to the UK, but when I'm here I use public transport because cars in this city are mad. I mean the driving here is insane. You know, I can see it from both perspectives. I think When you're out in the New Forest and you see people who haven't ridden a bike for sort of 20 years, going like, you know, wobbling around the road, you're like, oh, dude, come on, do this properly. Or the worst ones are like what my mum calls the mammals. They've got all the gear,
And they rode like four abreast on the road. You're like, you're not helping. You are not helping.
It's really difficult because to go back to your previous example there of somebody who hasn't ridden for years and they're on the bike, like, where else are they supposed to start? It's undeniably good that people are getting on bikes. And it is really difficult. And I do get it. You know, you're cruising along and you're trying to get round the cyclist and they're wobbling all around. But ultimately, it's going to make you 30 seconds later to where it is you're going.
Oh yeah, granted, I completely get you with that. Yeah. I think the thing is, and the UK does this particularly badly, I think, is that they go, oh, we want more people to cycle, and yet they've not really put very much into creating cycle paths that would take people off roads, or indeed integrate them very well, or when they have tried to come up with them, they've come up with quite a limited sort of way of doing it. Weirdly, you talked about the roundabout earlier.
Yeah,
I saw that in Cambridge, they developed this what they call the Dutch roundabout, and that will make things a lot easier. I think it's just getting those things right, and it's working with both and making sure that people have got bikes that are properly measured and sized, and they've got the kit on, and that they are proficient. You know, you don't let someone just loose behind a wheel of a car. I know a bicycle can't necessarily kill someone, but they can cause a lot of, you know, damage potentially by not people knowing what they're doing, or worse, the cyclist is nervous when they ride. Because this is the thing, the traffic can make cyclists nervous, and then entails...
Yeah, because drivers don't give them enough space quite often.
Yeah. Yeah, or worse than that...
Southampton has done a really good job lately. There's new cycle lanes that have been built around Southampton. And I make a point of trying to use them, even if it sort of means going slightly out of my way or taking a slightly longer route to work. Because you see the people there noting down on the clipboard who's using them.
Yeah.
And I always feel good that I'm one of those ticks, because it proves that it was money reasonably spent.
Yeah,
I think there's still a lot of work to be done there, isn't there? We're trying to get the balance right between motorists and cyclists. Mm. But I do see a lot of, like you mentioned initially, with that story there, bias towards motorists is still prevalent in everything. I didn't see anything wrong with the ad myself. I mean, in the short term, it's given them a lot more publicity by having it banned, because obviously now it's all in the media and shared online and stuff, and people will go out of their way to see what this advert is that's been banned. So,
which is basically the same as that troll. The end result's the same.
The end result's the same.
Cause outrage. It'll become
popular. Cause outrage.
Cause outrage.
As they say, there is no such thing as bad PR, they say. So that brings us to the end of those news stories for the week. So we had the four stories that we went through in the end. We now then pick one of those to become our story of the week. So is there any particular standouts for either of you from those stories that you particularly liked?
I think I liked the last one because it was an example of the French getting upset and motorists getting upset. I don't dislike the French, I might say. It's just I love how easily they get upset by stuff and how easily they go on strike. I'm in awe of the French and their ability to be so very outraged by everything. Wonderful.
Brilliant.
I love the things that they get outraged about as well. I remember being in France a few years ago and there was a thing on the news where farmers were going into supermarkets and throwing Spanish tomatoes on the floor because they were like, no, we should be eating our own tomatoes.
Yeah.
Dear. So we got one vote for the bike story. What about you, Lloyd? What's your vote going for?
I'm indifferent.
Well, that's
the spirit.
That's the spirit, Lloyd.
They're all equally good.
Good.
I cannot
know
choose.
That I've picked the right stories there that have really got you going. Well, if you're indifferent, then I think the vote goes with Darren's choice.
I'm happy to concede to the gentleman welder.
I believe I won it last week as well, but that was much easier because it was just me.
It's just just you and me. So yeah, you chose it, and okay, fair enough. I'm not going to argue with that. Yeah.
So reigning champion, I'll have you know.
That is our story of the week: is the advert for the new e-bike banned in France because it shows cars in a bad light.
a podcast by Her Majesty the Queen.
My name's Darren Saunders. My podcast is 60,000. There is a reason for the name of it. And very few people ever ask me why it's called 60,000, which is kind of annoying, actually, because I like saying it. But yeah, it's 60,000. It's a calm oasis in a noisy world, I think is how I like to put it. But the wording changes all the time because my uploads are so infrequent.
Yeah, I was one of those. I did think of what is that the name for a while and never thought to ask. So if you explain it to our listeners.
So 60,000, there are 30,000 neurons between your ear and your brain, which makes 60,000 neurons in total. And so the idea of the podcast was to just offer something that was nice to listen to, you know, kind of calming to the brain. And I figured, you know, what better way than to massage those 60,000 neurons?
And I like it. It is, when you listen to the show, it is very calming. It's very well put together, I must say. The music and the narration and everything, it's all very compact and it's very easy to listen to. Was that your aim?
Well, the aim really was, I'm a huge fan of the likes of The Memory Palace and 99% Invisible, then shows like Rumblestrip and Home of the Brave, all American, actually. I've yet to find what I'm looking for in British podcasts. And I've kind of taken the attitude of if the thing you want isn't out there, then you may as well go and make it yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you know The Memory Palace.
I know of it, but I'm not that familiar.
It's worth picking it up. It's worth listening to. It's just a lovely little thing. It's Nate DeMayo. It's part of Radiotopia. Every fortnight, he releases a new episode. And they're essentially like 10 or 12 minute history essays. But they're so beautifully put together. And every single episode I upload is essentially trying to emulate what Nate DeMayo does. And I've never managed it yet. But I keep trying.
I do like it. It's a good source of inspiration, like you say. If something doesn't exist, you're out and make it. Whereas what I've done is taken different aspects that do exist and mushed them all together. So taken a slightly different approach than you. Moving forward, have you got like long term plans for the podcast?
Well, ultimately, I just want to keep doing the thing I do with it. I don't have much time to spend on it. Sadly, I am a welder by trade, so I have to spend 40 hours a week at least earning money to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And so I carve out half an hour or an hour here and there. So my long-term plans for it are to keep doing it, basically.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
You know, ultimately the long-term plans, I suppose, are to become a millionaire off the back of it.
How feasible that is
a different matter.
Are there any particular subject matters you'd really want to cover?
Not really. I sometimes think about whether it would be nice to be part of a podcast network, because there's lots of podcast networks out there now. But I do wonder whether or not, if that was the case, would I end up having to do a specific thing? You know, I'd have to plow a furrow. And as it stands at the moment, 60,000 is essentially whatever I want it to be. And I really like that. And as much as I have a degree in radio production, that's why it was very kind of you to say that it sounds very well put together, because, you know, I'd like to think that the 18 or so thousand pounds that I'm having to pay back is evidence of that. I often think how much I'd love to work in radio and how much I'd love to bring 60,000 to a radio broadcast. Yeah. But I would have to play by someone else's rules. And so with regards to the subject matter, it's whatever I want it to be. Somebody asked me the other day what genre it is, and I couldn't answer the question. My recent episodes, two of my favorites are, one was about Yuri Gagarin going into space for the first time, which I actually in a very uncharacteristic moment, managed to upload it on the anniversary of that day. Normally, I think about it 2 days before and think, oh, I should have done that, and then release it 6 weeks later. So, yeah, one episode was Yuri Gagarin's first trip to space. And then another episode was a review of a friend of mine's album. And so it's to some extent, I suppose, it's kind of like an audio blog.
Yeah, yeah, it's a well-crafted, well-produced audio blog.
I'll take that.
That would be a very good way of describing it, really. It's quite an eclectic collection of stuff, like you say, the differences in there. And I can totally understand where you're coming from, and it can be whatever you want it to be. Because I think that's the joy.
The other thing is the production. I don't wish to speak ill of podcasts, because I think podcasts are a wonderful thing. But there are, I'd say, probably 90% of the podcasts out there are four guys sat around a microphone talking about something.
Yeah.
And there's almost no production, no editing involved in that, save for editing out some of the more racy comments, perhaps, that they make while they're chatting. There's no production values to it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because that's just a different type, a different style. But what I want to bring to my own is the notion that you can listen to it and think, that sounded really nice.
Yeah.
And I think the trouble is, a lot of people don't really realize how long it takes.
Yeah.
For example, I don't know whether you've listened back through all of the episodes. I think there's only about 12 up there anyway. But one of them was an incomplete list of things for which I thank Europe. And it was about 10 to 12 minutes long. I can't remember exactly. And part of that was music, European music. And I thought, oh, do you know what would be great is I'll make this little montage of European music. Just a few seconds, you know, the hook from the chorus, you know, just a little bit fading from one track to another. That section of that 12-minute podcast was about, I don't know, half a minute, something like that. That took me about 8 hours. And people don't realize, my wife, it drives her mad. I'll say, I'm just going to go and do some of my podcast. And she'll go, okay, fine. And, you know, she'll leave me alone for a couple of hours, and she'll come back and say, how'd you get on? I said, well, I've done about another 30 seconds. And she just sort of looks at me and then walks off.
No, I get that look a lot. I could talk to you for hours about audio editing techniques and what have you. I will leave that for now. Maybe we'll circle back to that conversation another day. In a minute, we're going to hear a clip from one of your episodes. If people like that, and you want to tell people where they can find you and where they can find the podcast.
Yep, I'm on Twitter at 60kpod, same on Instagram, although I don't really use Instagram. And then I've just moved over to Anchor FM, so that's exciting, which means that you can find me on all of the platforms now. So it's the word 60,000, and yeah, just go and binge. Excellent. It'll only take about 45 minutes.
Excellent. Well, Darren, thank you very much for talking to us.
That's quite all right. Thank you very much for calling me up. This has been wonderful. I could talk about myself for hours.
A warm gyros on a warm Corfu evening. Pasta in a piazza in Florence. Pizza on a terrace in Naples. Crepes on a damp late spring lunchtime in Holland. Aromatic paella stuffed with fish, prawns, vegetables and perfectly cooked rice from a tiny restaurant in Tenerife. Bitterballen eaten to accompany that hefty stout at a brewery in Bruges. An open sandwich in Stockholm, bought in a small cafe while rain lashes at the front window, tourists and locals alike deepening bonds over strong coffee and good food. The diversity of cuisine across Europe is something to behold. You could throw a man blindfolded into the back of a van, drive him for hours, sit him at a table in a restaurant and remove his blindfold, and he'd be able to tell you what country you'd taken him to. And he'd enjoy the food he was eating. But you're never too far from a British-run greasy spoon if you can't get enough of sausage, egg and chips with endless repeats of Only Fools and Horses on a TV blaring away above the counter. Thank you, Europe, for your food. Even if it did take us too long to learn to trust it, we needed to learn that not all European cuisine was sauerkraut and frog's legs. Art. I know very little of art, but I know that there is much of it from Europe that is to be admired. Michelangelo's David, arm bent, ready to loose his sling, kill Goliath and go down in history, to become the symbol of the little man. A statue that is significantly bigger than you would imagine. Da Vinci's Mona Lisa, far smaller than you'd imagine, with that enigmatic smile known the world over, even by people whose knowledge of art begins and ends at what Neil Buchanan made on Art Attack. The Guggenheim in Bilbao, with Louise Bourgeois' horrifying brass spider, Mammon, and the architecture of Antoni Gaudi that stands in Barcelona. Is architecture art? Possibly. Is Gaudi's architecture art? Definitely. Take one look at La Sagrada Familia, or the roof terrace of the Palau Güell, or the gatehouses of the Parc Güell, and tell me that those buildings are not art. Thank you, Europe, for your art. Without it, this world would be a somewhat more dull place.
Sorry, Baz, I can't agree with you on this one. This is Baz and Dave's hidden Cinemagic. The whole point is to do reviews of those movies that people have never heard of. We can't do Dickie Roberts, former child star. It's a cinematic classic.
The show is coming to a close. Our time channel hopping through podcasts is up for another week. If you listened all the way through, then thank you very much. Please do hit that subscribe button and make sure you don't miss any future episodes. And if you have a minute, please do give us a rating and a review on whatever podcast system you happen to be listening to us on. If you particularly like the weird week that was, you can find us on the Dead Pit Society Live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. BST on getvocal.com. That's V-O-K-L. Or seek out Dead Piet Sock on Facebook, Twitter, or Periscope. Don't forget to check out our guest podcast, 60,000, on your podcast platform of choice, and find Darren on Twitter at 60kpod, 60kpod. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all the social medias at owlbearuk, and you can send us any emails to bearcave@owlbear.uk. Until next time, behave yourselves.
The Bear Cave and Other Podcasts is written, produced and presented by Alan Galpin. Guests include Darren Saunders and Lloyd Collins, with additional performances from Drax Bishop. Theme music is One Shot by Hook Sounds. News theme by Fabio Music. Other music from Adam Witofsky and Anna Managuchi, used under Creative Commons license. Your move, creep.